Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College Podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. I want to remind you that this year's College Podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with the 2014 attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. Aaron, back from the Palmetto State. What is the corporate name of the Clemson-South Carolina Challenge, Aaron? It's got some little...
The Reedy logo. River Rivalry, is that
Reedy it? River Rivalry, that's it. It's hard to say. Hard for me to say anyway. But you were at the Reedy River Rivalry this weekend. See, like I said, Baseball America had a little Carolinas bias this weekend. We stayed in the Carolinas, and we had teams from across the country. We had the Notre Dame Challenge over at USA Baseball Complex, with Notre Dame, Michigan, UCLA, NC State, and, of course, Youngstown State, the team we were all out to see. Mm-hmm. No offense to Youngstown State. Did hear they have a closer who's worth watching. There's news from around the country with Air Force having a vote this week to about the possibility of that program being ended. So we had Temple basically officially shuttered. Really, that kind of came down last week. Air Force could be next. So there's a lot to chew on in today's College Baseball Podcast. Aaron, but let's start off with the Reedy River Rivalry. And South Carolina made quite a statement, Aaron, because we really thought long and hard at the top of our top 25 rankings about moving the Gamecocks to number one. We wound up not doing it. We went, we went chalk at the top with Virginia, Florida State, remaining one and two with the Gamecocks three. But a resounding victory for South Carolina, a sweep of Clemson, their rival, packed houses throughout. And when push came to shove, South Carolina pushed, and Clemson did not shove back. They fell over. And 23 out of the last 30 meetings now in the win column for the Gamecocks against their rival Tigers.
Yeah, and I think it's, 13 out of 16 or 14 out of 16? Since 2010, it's been especially pronounced, since the 2010 College World Series. You got to wonder if the Gamecocks are just in Clemson's head right now. And it's not like they played poorly on Sunday. Clemson, to their credit, they came out after really a collapse, I think, on Saturday, the ninth day, that ugly ninth inning where they had all those walks, that five-run ninth, and the tensions and everything, the tempers flaring.
That's the best way to say it, because it wasn't a hullabaloo. There was hullabaloo, right. But there wasn't a fracas.
Right.
There wasn't a foo-foo.
It was more hollering than anything else.
Yes, pretty much.
Clemson came back and regained their composure and played very well for eight innings. And frankly, there were a couple of things that could have gone their way over the course of the weekend that didn't. I guess when you're in a rut, you don't get the breaks.
Right.
I mean, there was that call down the line yesterday in the later innings when Clemson had a chance to extend their lead, a ball that everyone thought was fair. It sure seemed to hit a lot of chalk. And I was sitting with some scouts at that point, and everyone thought it was fair, and they were questioning where the umpire was standing and saying that he didn't do a good job. And there was another call down the line, I think Saturday, down the left field line that didn't go Clemson's way, a ball that hit the umpire, and it was not very well umpired series, I thought, frankly. Not that that's why Clemson lost.
I mean, how about the Saturday game where the head coach makes contact
yeah.
and is on the field and makes contact with a player during the play.
Right, exactly.
Right in front of the umpire, and there was nothing called.
No.
I mean, I think it would have been forgivable understanding if Jack Leggett had been ejected there.
Sure.
Just, I'm sure that's in the rule book. Hey, if a player,
Yep.
That was really unusual. That led to the heated discussion. This, like you said, there were just some obvious calls that just seemed like they weren't made or, But the calls aren't why South Carolina swept this
right,
series. It seems
right.
like the reason South Carolina swept this series is that its pitching is a little bit stronger.
Yes.
And then when they needed the big hits, they got them. I think one of the tweets I saw that I liked the best from you is, I like all your tweets, but especially the ones defending me. But the South Carolina tradition of the big veteran power bat in the middle of the lineup, the names change, but whether it's LB Dantzler or Yaron Peters or Justin Smoke's a little bit better version of it, but he had his Phil Disher. The guys who aren't necessarily prospects but are really good college players,
yeah.
And then they have another one of those in Kyle Martin.
Exactly. He fits that mold. He's so physical in the middle, and he just can really hit. And I like their lineup a lot. Connor Bright is one of those South Carolina guys that maybe flies under the radar a little bit. He's not flashy, but he's really locked in. Everything was hard contact from him this weekend. You know, Joey Pancake hasn't even really gotten going in the three hole, and when that happens, they're going to be even more dangerous. And then you got to think at some point, you know, Tanner English is going to put it together, and he showed signs this weekend. He had a couple balls hard. He had a home run on Friday. He had that big two-run double to give South Carolina the lead in the ninth inning on Sunday. He beat out a bunt in a key spot, you know, and he's going to beat out a lot of bunts with his speed. But,
right.
You know, so they've got weapons that haven't even necessarily peaked yet. So there's more upside with the South Carolina team than we've even seen so far. But, you know, but the bottom line is, yes, I think they're better in the bullpen. And going into this series, when we're breaking it down, I thought South Carolina would win the series because I like their pitching better. And I certainly feel like that opinion was reinforced this weekend. I mean, the Gamecocks now, especially in the bullpen, with Cody Mincy and Joel Seddon, they got those two guys that they really trust back there.
Because they lost a very valuable, trusted guy in the bullpen last year in Webb.
Yep.
So that was a question mark we had coming into the year. Do they have that go-to guy? We thought they did, but now they've kind of proved it.
Exactly. And for Clemson, you know, I feel like they believe in Clay Schmidt, and he came in and did a great job for an inning and a third Sunday night, and then the ninth, they just squared him up over and over again. And I got to say that it struck me, John, that, you know, every time a Clemson pitcher was particularly emotional in celebrating a strikeout to end an inning, it happened on Saturday. Matthew Crownover in the second inning, you know, got a strikeout to end the second. And he's jumping around like Tiger Woods just won the Masters with a huge fist pump. And then he comes out the next inning and gives up five runs. And then on Sunday, you know, Clay Schmidt was strutting, and, you know, the scouts.
Cock of the walk.
Oh, man. It was, you know, it was some serious bravado. You know, after he struck out three guys in a row in the eighth, and he did it after the second strikeout, and he really did it after the third strikeout, and then the scouts around me are saying, man, I'm not on that, you know. I'm not on that. And then he comes out in the ninth, and he gets hit hard. Maybe it's a coincidence.
I don't think so.
I don't know. The Gamecock players said, hey, we noticed it.
It really has seemed that way in the rivalry, that South Carolina seems like its emotion, they seem that they play well with emotion. And Clemson seems like it almost gets too, you know, you see it all the time in every sport when a rivalry means so much to one team and they want it too bad. You can't fault the Clemson players for wanting it that bad. But the results are the results, Aaron, and there's a gap between these two programs now. I mean, it's not just the head-to-head meetings, it's overall, but there's a gap. And this series did mean more to Clemson, because if they win this series, they're reversing a recent tide, and they're making their mark against the recent national champion, and they haven't been able to do it.
And you know, you got a five-run lead on Friday, and you find a way to lose. You got a two-run lead with two outs in the ninth on Sunday, and you find a way to lose.
The way it happened.
That's what was so stunning about this thing, was the way it happened. And then even Saturday, I know that wound up being 10-2, but, you know, they were in that game. Even when it was 5-2, they had the bases loaded. They had opportunities.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get the big hit like South Carolina could. So, yes.
It's 23-31 now, correcting myself. It's 23 of the last 31 for the Gamecocks since the 2007 season. The thing that struck me, Aaron, in this series was just talking to some of the guys Saturday when I went out to USA Complex, was this the scouts who were there, and then also the talking to some of the USA guys who were around Grayson Griner last summer, and just the progress that Grayson Griner made, the big hit he had Friday, the leadership that he brings. That seems like another separating factor. Yeah. We've talked in the preseason about how much we like Chris Oakey and Garrett Boulware. That's one of the strengths of Clemson's team. They have two catchers that you like.
Yep.
Boulware is a physical veteran, and Oakey was a high talent freshman, a guy who should be a real difference maker at the college level over his career. But Grayson Griner is he's making a difference now, and it just seems like leadership-wise, and now he's starting to come into his own a little bit offensively. Another separating factor for South Carolina, another big reason why they're our pick to win the SEC this year.
And it was striking to me on Friday night, you know, after Griner hit that grand slam and in the post-game press conference. First of all, listening to Griner talk to the media, you know, it's kind of clear that he's one of those guys that has that it factor a little bit. You know, I mean, I think I tweeted that he reminded me of Trey Turner.
Right, you did.
Just with his presence. And then to hear Chad Holbrook get up and just kind of gush about him and what he means to his program and how special he is and how he learns from the kid every day. I mean, that shows you, you know, this guy is the heart and soul of their team. And you got to have those guys. And the Gamecocks during this this 5-year run. It seems like they've had a lot of those kind of guys. So
this is a program that's pretty had pretty good catchers going back a long way to the Brandon Pack and the Landon Powell era. I mean, this, you know, Ray Tanner's always had pretty good and two-way catchers as well, and they've had them recently as well in their championship years. They had, you know, they said that they could go offense, defense, behind the plays. But Griner, if the bat comes along, Aaron, you know, has a chance to be as good as any of them because, you know, the defense has been there. And that's the amazing part to me is that he's done this since freshman year. He had the yips.
Yeah.
He had a hard time throwing the ball back to the pitcher. I mean, this is a significant progression for this young man in his career. There are a lot of people who think very highly. I think there have always been scouts who are a little skeptical on the bat with him, and you see the frame, and some of them all have always thought pitcher. You see the frame, and you see the arm strength. I think some guys have wanted to see him as a conversion guy down the line that I've talked to over his career. But as a bat comes along, it's hard to find catchers who can catch and throw. And he has those abilities, and now the bat's starting to come along. He's a pretty intriguing prospect as well.
He really is. And back to South Carolina and the discussion we had in the rankings this week.
Right.
We did think about putting them at number one. And I think ultimately the reason that we held off is A, the rest of South Carolina's schedule was very, very soft before this weekend.
Yep.
So, you know, there's not really the entire body of work there that justifies, I think, moving down a couple of teams that have been good. I mean, Virginia, yeah, they had a midweek loss to VMI, but they swept their weekend series. We love their talent, obviously. I don't think they've done anything that would, you know, merit moving them down. And certainly
right.
Florida State, after winning 2 out of 3 against a good Miami team in a rivalry series, hate to move them down. So
right. That's
why we wound up just leaving the default there. But we certainly talked about it. I mean, you have to be impressed with what the Gamecocks did this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the first real big test for the Gamecocks, where they'd played Bucknell and Eastern Kentucky on the previous two weekends. So the first big test, and they passed flying colors, and so a significant kind of statement win for them. Aaron, the other big tournaments around the country, pardon me, there were several, but certainly the next one was the one out in Texas, the Astros College Classic. And the team that kind of benefited the most from that and that jumped up our rankings the most from that was Texas. Back in the top 10, I mean, Jim Schoner does a lot of the research for us on that, but can't remember the last time Texas was in the top 10 three weeks into the season. So they may have been ranked high in preseason rankings, but they kind of had stumbled out of the gates in recent years. What's different about this Texas team from the last couple of iterations, at least so far?
Well, they're getting just enough offense and timely hitting, you know, and that's what happened on Sunday against Sam Houston State. They were losing that game 2-0 for a while there, and then, you know, I remember I turned it on the Longhorn Network on my computer in the middle innings, and Sam Houston State had a chance to extend the lead. I mean, they had two runners thrown out at the plate in the fifth or sixth inning, I think. And Texas, you know, recouped and recovered and, you know, they got the hits, and that's kind of the thing they didn't get last year. They didn't get timely hitting. I mean, I don't think their personnel is, you know, they're not explosive yet, certainly.
Right.
But I do think that all those freshmen they brought in have given that offense a little bit more physicality and more, you know, they're just more talented offensively, and so I think it'll take some time for them to really gel. But you know, their pitching is top shelf. You know, it was very good last year. It was top
right.
10 in ERA in the country last year. But they're more experienced even now, and they're better and deeper. And I think the offense is a little bit better. So it's enough that you know, they're off to a pretty good start here, and they beat some good teams this weekend.
Right, they beat Rice, which was ranked 13th. They beat Sam Houston State. Wrap up in the middle, they beat Houston, which had won its first 8 games. Maybe not the cleanest weekend for the Cougars defensively in the Astros College Classic, but really a chance for Houston to kind of make a statement and get in the top 25 rankings, and they couldn't quite do it. So, you know, kudos to Texas. Anything else from that weekend from the Astros College Classic jump out to you? I guess Sam Houston State's kind of the other story, Aaron. They've been, they were on the cusp of the top 25 preseason. They were kind of a fit fave coming into the year. The Fit Matrix liked Sam Houston State, I believe. Were they in the top 25 in the Fit Matrix, or not quite?
I don't recall.
Okay, we don't have the Matrix in front of us. Contrary to popular belief, I don't have it walking around with me like as a holographic projection sticking out of my iPad. I'd like to. If that happened, that'd be pretty cool. But the Bearcats, I mean, what makes this team tick?
Well, first of all, you know, they're built differently than like a Texas, for instance, because they're a veteran offensive team. You know, their lineup is very experienced, and they've got a lot of guys that you know, are two-way guys that can hit and defend. You know, and like we're talking about South Carolina with the experienced catcher, and I think how much that matters. Right. Anthony Azar behind the plate for Sam Houston State is one of those guys, and you know, they've got a real catalyst with Cole Atwood at the top of the lineup, and these are older players that have been to regionals and won a lot of big games. And you know, one thing about this program is they play a lot of very good midweek games, and they win a lot of them. They have since David Pierce got there, you know, I think they're very dangerous, and I do like their pitching too, and they got a legitimate number one starter with Tyler Epler.
And they beat a legitimate number one starter. I mean, nobody scored runs in that series except for Sam Houston State. In the Astros College Classic, if you scored runs, the other team committed a lot of errors, or you were named Sam Houston State.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas goes undefeated in the weekend. They went, what, they scored eight runs the whole weekend and gave up four? I mean, Sam Houston State hung five runs on Brandon Finnegan. And just talking to scouts the last couple of weeks, Finnegan's first two starts were lights out. Yep. I mean, he was a little bit better than people remembered from last summer when he really shined for the college national team. And he still struck out 11 against Sam Houston State, Aaron. So that's a pretty good sign that you can go up against an opposing team's one of the top 10 Friday starters in the country and hang a win on him like they did. So hang a loss on him, I should say, like Sam Houston State did. Anything else from that weekend stick out to you in the Astros College Classic?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned about Rice because, first of all, they're not scoring runs at all, and now it sounds like Jordan Stevens could be hurt. You know, I think there was a kind of a cryptic answer from Wayne Graham about he's got arm soreness or something, but, you know, came out of that game Friday pretty early, and that's always, you know, that's always a little bit of a red flag, and he's a key guy, you know. I mean, it's him and Lamond are really the two key guys on that staff, so if that turns out to be something that keeps him out for a while, Rice could be in a little bit of trouble.
That would probably be a lot of trouble. I mean, it's not a deep pitching staff. It's supposed to be it's top heavy.
It is top heavy.
And it's a lineup that we thought would be a little more physical, a little bit more of a powerful offense, at least in the current college baseball context, and it hasn't worked out that way yet. So
not yet.
It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron talking a little college baseball. Aaron, the other, you know, again, we saw Notre Dame here this weekend. We saw Michigan. You know, NC State, UCLA. I guess UCLA is really the other team that made the statement. And quite a way to. We talked last week in the podcast, so I don't want to belabor the Bruins too much. But with the injuries they had, Kramer, Filia, two of these more experienced and higher upside bats going down,
and Kevin Williams
being out for a while. So three, you got 130 your starting lineup, and probably guys who would hit what 2-3-4 in your lineup, maybe 1-3-4. And they're out. And this is the way UCLA responds. It's Cody Poteet, Grant Watson, James Caprillion. Three dominant starts in Cary this weekend.
And that's what I was kind of waiting to see from Caprillion and Poteet. I mean, Watson has been good out of the gate. Not as good last week against Cal Poly. But, you know, Caprillion and Poteet have a lot of talent and hadn't yet really done it. And, boy, it sounds like they were both really good this weekend. And Josh Norris was there. He's got video on our site and reports.
26 strikeouts between them for Poteet and Caprillion.
And what, two hits?
Maybe
like
three.
That?
It's a small amount of hard contact. Yeah. You know, when you're missing bats that consistently. The guy that I saw that I wanted to ask you about, Aaron, you know, just hashtag not a scout, but Jacob Cronenworth for Michigan. I had a good look at Jacob Cronenworth in that Michigan-Notre Dame game. The Wolverines won that one in 10 innings. Cronenworth, three hits, two RBIs, also two scoreless innings on the mound. What can you tell me about, again, I was with my son. I was talking to a lot of people. I didn't bear down on Jacob Cronenworth, but it was a good look, but despite the fact that he was wearing the Clemson-cut pants that Michigan now favors. You knew it was going to get worked in somewhere. What's the skinny on Jacob Cronenworth?
He's a good player. I mean, I think he and the shortstop, Mazies, are both, I think they're both former hockey players.
Okay.
So they kind of have that hard-nosed mentality, and they're both physical. And
I believe it was that we were asking about Cronenworth around that at that game, and that one of the photographers, friend of the program and friend of BA, Ali Boyer-Rodi, was asking if he played hockey because he's missing a tooth, a prominent missed tooth up front.
There you go.
You know, he's either from fill in the state that you want to make fun of, or he's a hockey player. So we figured it was hockey.
Now, he's a hard-nosed guy, and I think I like his stroke. I mean, he's got a lot of line drive strength in there with probably a little bit more pop down the road. He's got arm strength. I think he's pitched for him some, and he's a good player. Those two guys, I think him and Mazies are really a key part of their core there. And those guys played a lot as freshmen last year, had a lot to do with Michigan's improvement last year under Eric Bakich. I like that Michigan team. Big Ten is very intriguing to me, John, because Michigan State has had some nice wins early on this year.
Michigan State's kind of caught my attention. First of all, because they play a tough schedule year in and year out. Jake Boss he's not afraid to travel. He's not afraid to play teams. Not that other teams are, but I give him credit for that. And a little bounce back this week from Indiana with a win against Louisville.
And how about Illinois going down to Gainesville?
Right.
And beating Florida twice and Florida Gulf Coast twice and not allowing, I think, four runs in four games. I mean, that's a pretty loud weekend. And that's one of those programs that it feels like they're solid every year and sometimes they can fly under the radar a little bit. But Dan Hartlib does a great job.
And they're opening a lot of construction on their ballpark. What is it? It's Jones Field. Yeah. Indiana, just another team.
Illinois,
thank you. We had, you used to look at the Big Ten and think it was like a two or three teams, kind of almost like the same two or three teams every year.
Right.
Ohio State, Minnesota, maybe a third team like a Michigan. Obviously, Michigan had the big year in 07. But now, Aaron, you're talking about a league, and Illinois certainly has had its moments over the years.
Yep.
But from a consistency standpoint, it was usually Minnesota, Ohio State, maybe a 13. And now it seems like that league's like seven or eight deep
in
competitive teams. And Purdue, which was on top of the league 2 years ago, is kind of going through some rebuilding right now. But this is a deep league.
It is a deep league.
To win this league, Indiana was obviously our preseason favorite. But they're going to have to – it's not going to be easy to win the Big Ten. I mean, what's realistic for a number of bids for the Big Ten this year?
Well, last year they weren't that far off from getting three. I mean, really, if Nebraska wins one more game over the course of a season, I think they get in.
Because whether they were one game under 500, and they had like a top 25 RPIs in like all year.
Yeah, 25, 30, it was good. It was a strong schedule. So, I mean, I feel like Indiana, Nebraska, those two teams that we had as projected regional teams in the preseason. But then you got, Michigan, Michigan State, you got Illinois. Maybe you could see an Ohio State in the mix. I mean, there's six teams that I feel like are legitimate regional caliber teams. I still like, some of the talent on Minnesota's roster. I think Northwestern's improved, its talent level. I mean, it is deep. And so I think probably you're looking at two or three bids, but just because of the RPI reality. But I think there's more teams that are regional caliber.
It's a competitive league. And I like the fact that, 5-10 years ago, you could have looked at the Big Ten and you could have imagined a lot of teams not even having baseball anymore. And instead, you've seen programs around that league invest. And Illinois is yet another one that's doing some investing. And we have a couple questions on Twitter. I was going to also add that Ohio State went 2-1 in the Keith LeClair Classic this weekend over in Greenville, North Carolina. So the only loss being 3-2 at the hands of the home team, the homestanding Pirates. So. Good weekend for Ohio State, good weekend for Illinois, a little bit of a bounce-back week in a way for Indiana.
Yeah, and Iowa is off to a 9-1 start.
They are. I wasn't sure whether to ask you about Iowa. They do have a coaching change, Rick Heller. I think we think highly of Rick Heller. Did a nice job at Northern Iowa, did a nice job at Indiana State, now he's at Iowa. I don't know if we expected to turn around that quickly, but if there's anybody who's going to turn Iowa around, it would seem to be Rick Heller would be the candidate. And, baseball in that state, clearly perfect game being based there and bringing in a lot of, it's elevated just the playing opportunities for high school kids in Iowa, in the state of Iowa. You have the junior college there. Is it Iowa Western? That's won a NJCAA title or two. So it just seems like college baseball and amateur baseball in the state is much better now than it was, say, 15 years ago. Maybe the time is ripe for Iowa to be another team that's competitive.
Tough landscape,
in the Big Ten.
Though, in that league.
Right.
Being competitive is one thing. Being able to really make headway is another.
Couple of good questions on Twitter. Jason Pyant, Eyes on Vandy. You got a lot of Vanderbilt Twitter and bloggers out there with a good question. What would be the non-conference rivalry you would like to see played on an annual basis similar to South Carolina Clemson? Isn't there one that makes sense, Aaron? I personally would love to see USC Notre Dame in baseball like you do in football. I think it would be good for both of them. I know I was... looking forward to it when it almost happened in a regional back in 2001 and then it didn't. It would seem to be one that would be a TV event that you could pick up. That's one that sticks out to me. Are there others that make sense for you, Aaron?
You know, there are a couple. These are more minor things. But, I mean, you know, in-state rivalries that we don't get to see because of other factors. You know, South Carolina and Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, Miami and FIU.
We do see Miami and Florida every year, which is Florida State also. Those are two that you see in the state of Florida that we do see. Again, they're heated. They're not quite as heated, in my mind, as South Carolina Clemson, just because South Carolina Clemson gets very, very heated. Those are good ones. Texas Tech A&M. That's one that used to be in conference. That's probably the one that jumps out to me the most.
Absolutely.
They used to be conference rivals, probably still should be conference rivals, but the college sports landscape being what it is. But that's one that they don't play, correct, Aaron?
That's the right. I believe that's correct. And that's the answer. That's the one that I would love to see.
That's the one that makes the most sense to me. But good question. And then Ryan Sullivan, NatsGM.com is his Twitter handle. So I don't know if this is actually Mike Rizzo or not. Maybe it's Jim Bowden with a secret Twitter handle. General question, but can you all talk about Terps baseball, Jake Stinnett, and the job Coach Sheff has done? Thanks. And Jake Stinnett, Aaron, the second nine-inning no-hitter of the college baseball season this weekend. You know, Eric Backich, we talked about his Michigan program, and there's more talent, I think, there at Michigan. He did not leave the cupboard bare, but John Sheff does a nice job on his own. A nice history as a head coach at Marist, as a recruiting coordinator at Louisiana Lafayette, now the head coach at Maryland. What's he got to work with there with the Terps?
Well, first of all, he's got a legitimate ace in Jake Stinnett, you know, and this is a guy that has always been kind of intriguing. You know, he's an arm strength guy, and when he got there, he was a two-way player, mostly a third baseman his freshman year, didn't pitch that much. And he's pitched a little bit more over the course of his career. You know, last year he became a full-time guy and was an all-ACC starting pitcher. And, you know, the more he pitches, the better he gets. And he's physical. He's 6'4", you know, works downhill. And it's, I mean, I heard he sits 90-93 and he'll touch 94, 95. Mm. And, you know, he'll pitch heavily off the fastball, but he'll mix in a little slider and a changeup. And he's got, you know, he got really good control. He pounds his zone. So, you know, that's really... You know, I know it was UMass, but, you know... He still did it through a no-hitter, and he's going to give them a chance to win every Friday in that league, even against the Luke Weavers and the Carlos Rodons of the world. I mean, he's a legit dude.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the ACC teams, and Duke is another team that has pretty legit pitching.
Yep.
There's some power arms in this league, even not at the top, which, you know, makes it, I think it's... You know, for the teams that you don't consider the top teams, does Maryland have enough to go with him to finally kind of make that push? I mean, I know they have third-team All-American Charlie White is back at the top of their lineup, a slap-and-dash outfielder who had a really good year last year. Hard to find outfielders who performed, so he was an All-American.
Was he for us? I know he was in the discussion. I don't know if he actually made the team or not.
I thought we had him on there. I could be wrong because he stole a lot of bags. I thought he was a third-team All-American for us, but they have an injury, I believe, to Kyle Hare-Convasar. Don't turn around. Kyle Convasar's in town.
I don't know what you're talking about right now.
It's a Falco song.
Sorry, I don't know what that is.
Kyle Convasar's in town. Yeah, come on.
Only Falco I know is Edie.
Alice Clar, Kyle Convasar. People of a certain age will know that one. Sorry. But they had good pitching last year, but they lost a couple guys. Jimmy Reed, I forget the right-hander's name. Kilpatrick, I believe, who's gone. What's left in the cupboard besides Jake Stinnett for the Terps this year?
Well, you know, I'm curious to kind of see what they can do here once they get into conference play. I mean, they have gotten off to a good start. I think they're 8-2.
Eight and two.
I mean, they swept a Bryant team.
We like Bryant.
And Bryant has a lot back from that team that John picked to win a regional last year.
I can't believe I did that.
You did.
I did do that.
Picked them to win a regional against Arkansas, and they performed well out there.
That's right. I remember that now.
In a game.
They were respectable for that pick. Yeah. It was more like a pick that I didn't believe in Arkansas, if memory serves.
Kansas State wound up winning the regional, so you were right not to believe in Arkansas, but... anyway.
And I know Maryland also lost some talent. They, you know, this is what can happen with a coaching change. You know, KJ Hockaday and Tim Kine both transferred out to NAIA schools. So they lost some power potential there. So the lineup's probably not as good as we thought it could be potentially coming into the year, considering the Hockaday has been a, Cal Ripken League legend. And
who never really put it together at Maryland.
And he hasn't put it together really anywhere. He's a tease. And Tim Kine played in the Cape last summer, showed some power. And they lost, so they lost two big bats. So they're probably going to have to win with pitching, defense, a little speed, and manufacturing some runs. Because you know, it's hard to replace power bats like that.
Yeah, I think it's Keeney. I think, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong in other pronunciation discussions today.
You have been. You're 0-1. We'll have to look that one up. The scouts I've talked to, scouts aren't good pronunciation guides. So the scouts I talked to saw him in the fall and saw him in the summer, called a Kine, but I could be wrong.
I did see Kyle Convasard DH to one of those games this weekend for Maryland, which is
I love his name. I saw him last year at NC State. Yeah. I love that name.
He's a good player too, and you know they've got some guys in the middle of that lineup that have performed for him. You know, Brandon Lowe and Lamont Wade. You know they've got some pieces here. They could be a decent offensive team, but I still don't really know what to make of Maryland. I look forward to seeing them a little bit more in ACC play.
And one other Twitter question, and for some reason I navigated away from my Twitter. I hope it wasn't a college baseball question, so we won't take that one. Aaron, I did want to talk about a couple of other series that we previewed. UCLA, we talked in the earlier about them in the statement, kind of as a West Coast team coming to the East, and they beat Carlos Rodon. They just dominated on the mound. They didn't just beat Carlos Rodon, they beat NC State. They shackled NC State's lineup, which I think is a pretty good lineup.
Yep.
So one of the better lineups in the country for me. But another statement series involving a Pac-10 team, a Pac-12 team, but the statement really made by Cal State Fullerton. I mean, just a resounding sweep by the Titans. And they'd struggled out of the gates at 4-3, but, man, Rick Vanderhook had to be pleased with what his team did this weekend. It was complete, Aaron. It seemed like it was all three phases of the game. Cal State Fullerton was better than Oregon.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, the thing that Oregon does really well, Fullerton does better, and that is pitch. And, you know...
That's it.
I mean, and Fullerton is certainly, I think, the more dangerous offensive team. And, you know, I think Oregon is a better offensive team than they have been in years past. I think they will be, you know, when the dust settles. I like some of the pieces there. But, you know, I think Fullerton with Chapman and Davis in the middle of the lineup, that's a separator. And Greg Velasquez, is, you know, the senior, has had a nice year so far. He's given them a real boost. And I think Austin Deamer's taken a step forward as a junior. You know, some of these older guys that Fullerton has been, you know, was hoping would be better, have been. So, yeah, certainly, you know, the Titans, they play well up there. And it does look like they played well in all facets. And, you know, they had some big innings against good Oregon pitching, and
it seems like it's really hard to put up crooked numbers against the Ducks.
It is,
and especially in their ballpark. It's a big ballpark, and yet
it's no turf too. It's just hard to string together rallies.
That's it. But Matt Chapman and JD Davis, Chapman with a 3-run homer. I mean, that's the kind of the separator between this Fullerton team potentially and recent iterations, is it not? This should be an offense that's capable of explosion, even against good pitching. Because it's a pretty veteran offense, and Davis, to me, is the separating factor there. This is a fifth-round pick at a high school who's got the power to, either the bat speed to hit any pitcher, does he not?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, it's legit big-time bat speed. And, you know, I mean, last year when they had Lorenzen and they had Lopez and Pedroza, they had some older guys. That was a really good offensive team, too. I mean, you know, it's like John Savage said after the Super Regional, he thought they were the best team in the country last year, and they just, UCLA beat them. UCLA beat a lot of really good teams last year on the way to the College World Series title. But, you know, so they lost some of those pieces, and I think maybe, you know, I don't know that the offense is going to be better than it was last year for Fullerton. But I do think that, you know, they've got enough pieces there to be a very good offensive team, and the pitching staff is incredible. So,
yeah,
how about Phil Bickford coming to the bullpen with seven strikeouts at what, 2-2/3?
Eight out, 7 by strikeouts. But that is it's a not so secret weapon.
Yeah.
But you did have the matchup this weekend of the two teams with the highest drafted unsigned players out of high school going against each other, Crook and Bickford. And even though Bickford had a somewhat small role, pretty loud performance in a small role out of the bullpen, and just a guy. Again, it's just a luxury that you have if you're Rick Vanderhook, that you can deploy Phil Bickford out of the bullpen. Talk about a moment of truth, guy.
Yeah.
You got a first-round arm if he's healthy, and he's been pretty healthy so far this year.
Oh, yeah.
Looking pretty good, just coming out there and blowing things away.
And Crook has been good for Oregon, too. I mean, that's the guy that,
right.
You know, there were some questions after he didn't sign about maybe the shoulder. Right. I mean, the health factor. And so far, talk about a guy that's been healthy and dealing. I mean, he's given them three strong starts, struck out a lot of guys, and it seems like the control is getting better week by week. So, he's got a bright future.
Hey, we'll take it. Players like Phil Bickford and Matt Crook coming to college, good for college baseball. We'll take it. Aaron, wrapping up a little bit, some new teams at the back of the rankings. We dropped out, just by coincidence, four SEC teams that were at the back of the rankings, all lost series this weekend. Alabama losing a series at Louisiana Lafayette. Pretty good week for the Raging Cajuns. TCB taking care of business.
They were fired up for that series. I think I saw somewhere that it's the first time they ever hosted a three-game series against an SEC team.
Wow.
I don't know if that's true, but I thought I saw that somewhere in passing. It was Mardi Gras weekend. They're never at home that weekend. They're always on the road. They want to, minimize distractions.
Probably a smart move.
And so instead they're at home, and I'm sure it was wild. They'd sell out crowds, and, they got great pitching from Austin Robichaud and then from Carson Baranek those first two games. And, that pitching staff looks like it is significantly improved because of those junior college transfers added in there.
And the maturity of Robichaud.
As
a coach's son, was, fairly well regarded out of high school, kind of a projection guy. Doesn't feel like the velocity is like, it doesn't feel like he's filled out those projections. But at the same time, he's got 2 years of weekend series experience here, and he's a good pitcher. He does have good stuff. Maybe it's not premium stuff, but he has good stuff, and he's pitching a weekend rotation for 3 years now, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and credit Alabama for not getting swept. They came back and put up some runs on Sunday. And, we ran them out of the top 25 because it was a 1-3 week. They did lose a midweek game also. But, certainly no shame in going on the road. And kudos to Alabama for scheduling that series.
Absolutely.
I mean, going on the road against a very dangerous mid-major in a tough atmosphere.
And kudos to Mitch Gaspard and his staff, period. That program's talent level is very different from what it was at the end of the Jim Wells era. Yeah. It's very different. Where 2-3 years ago, teams just were amazed by Alabama's lack of physicality. You just never hear that anymore. He's taken that team. They're going to be fine.
Yep.
I don't think we're worried about them. Like you said, very good sign. They went on the road, hostile environment, good team, didn't get swept.
Absolutely.
And then Texas A&M falls out of the rankings. Speaking of swept, A&M did get swept. So Fresno State, which was a team, Aaron, we had a real hard time. I mean, I say we, mostly you, a hard time kind of assessing just how good this team was coming into the season, because on paper, looked like one of the better Fresno State teams in the last 5 years, and now they started to play that way, and answering some of the preseason questions we had as they sweep a good A&M team.
Yeah, yeah.
And kudos to A&M for scheduling this series as well.
Sure, yeah, going out west.
We talked about, we were kind of knocking SEC teams for not going on the road, and that probably should have done that, because a lot of these teams, here's a weekend where Alabama and Texas A&M both did that on the road and challenged themselves, and they weren't up to the challenge, but kudos to them for scheduling it anyway.
And heck, the other team that we brought in, and the reason we brought in, one of the reasons we brought in Ole Miss instead of Tennessee is because Ole Miss went on the road for three games series to start at Stetson, whereas Tennessee hasn't left home. So,
great point.
Those are two teams that have both got off to very good starts.
I think this is going to help the conference when it comes time for the tournament selection, and you're on the fence with maybe a 8, 9, 10 SEC teams, maybe even more. The conference's RPI is always going to be good, but if every team in the league just plays one series on the road non-conference, that lifts the whole conference, especially if you're playing pretty good teams. And all these teams are. If you're on that baseball committee and you're looking in total at each of these teams, you're going to go down the line and see, man, this team played someone on the road. This team played on the road. This team challenged. That's going to look good come Memorial Day.
And, the ACC is just, I think, tried to do that, too, to some degree. I mean, certainly, Miami always plays its series against Florida. This year they also had a non-conference against Florida State.
Yep.
You had Florida State playing Georgia the week before.
Right.
NC State tried to go out west to play UC Santa Barbara.
Right.
Couldn't make it. Not their fault. There's some of the certainly Virginia, travels early in the year a little bit. Went down to that good tournament at Wilmington.
Yep.
They played a good series against ECU. So, it's not like a lot of people out west like to rag the ACC and the SEC because they don't travel much early in the season. And, we don't blame them to some degree staying close to home because, you can make money those weekends if you're Mississippi State or LSU.
Absolutely. That's a big difference. That's a huge difference. You could make money. If you're UCLA and you stay home this time of year, you might have 500 people at your game. True?
Yeah.
Fair? 800? 800 would be good, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit different when you have 8,000.
Yes.
You know, you're passing up a lot of money. So you can't blame those teams. And yet a lot of these teams still are challenging themselves on the road. I mean, Ole Miss has one of the bigger season ticket bases.
Absolutely.
And it's a good segue. First, Fresno State, though. Talk a little bit about Fresno and then Ole Miss, another team that's new in the top 25, as along with Kentucky that we ranked there, another team that, again, an SEC team that went on the road to start the year in that same tournament, beat UVA, and has played well all season. They get themselves in the rankings. But Fresno State, really, I mean, it just stands out. Two shutouts against Texas A&M this weekend. You know, what's going on with the Bulldogs to get them back into the top 25 rankings?
Well, first of all, Jordan Brink has taken that step forward. He's kind of, you know, we talked about Jake Stinnett from Maryland. Brink's kind of a similar guy who came in as a two-way guy, was more of a position player than a pitcher early in his career. Last year, he kind of transitioned to being more of a pitcher, and this year he's an ace, and he's got electric stuff. And he went out there and was a one hit, I think, he allowed against A&M and beat Daniel Mengden. And then, you know, but I think the staff has some more depth, too, than it had last year. Tim Borst was the guy who was outstanding on Sunday in that 1-0 shutout. They got the, I think it was Taylor Ward had the walk-off
hit. You got to come up with a Borst and Brink or Brink and Borst. And
it's like the modern-day Flack and Fronk, isn't it?
It is kind of perfect. I was going 1948
like that.
Boston Braves, naturally. Sure, you know, sure. Who doesn't think of the 1948 Boston Braves, Aaron, when you do that? But, yes, Flack and Fronk. That's an all-time, all-name team combo. Hard to beat that one. If only Chaz Frank could play with Flack, Frank, and Frank. It would have been perfect. But Brink and – I already forgot the other guy's name.
Brink and Borst.
Brink and Borst is pretty awesome, actually. It's too bad it's not just one player, Brink and Borst. Maybe Tim Breckbuehler can transfer out there.
Jace Brinkerhoff.
Brinkerhoff, another great one. Goose Kalunke. We've gone off the rails.
It happens.
But Fresno State, I mean, you shut out a top 25 team twice on a weekend, and you sweep a series, you're going to get in. And again, Ole Miss, Aaron, I think we talked about this is a pretty critical year for Ole Miss, it feels like. You know, last year you watched some of the games on TV, and so they were on a couple of SEC Thursday night games and a lot of empty seats. And what were they, 17-22 in their last 39 games, I think it was last year, stumbled down the stretch, wound up being a two-seed on the road, weren't even the regional runner-up over here in Raleigh in the regional there, did not look good in that regional. So a little bit on the line for Ole Miss to kind of get back into that SEC elite. And they're off to a good start with it this year. And this is after losing Bobby Wall, Mike Myers, two real rotation stalwarts. So what's left in Oxford?
Well, you know, I've heard really good reports on the three starters they do have. You know, Chris Ellis has taken that jump. We wrote about him last week in the Spike Spotlight. I've heard Christian Trent has been outstanding as a, you know, a left-hander that has good stuff. You know, he'll be up to 91 or 92, and he's got feel for pitching. And then Sam Smith, I've heard he's been up to 93, maybe 94, holding his velocity. And, you know, again, it's a three-pitch guy. So they've got three legit starters there. I like their lineup a lot heading into the year. I was just curious how their pitching would shake out. But, you know, they've got a very athletic lineup, a lot of speed, you know, with the Braxton Lee and Austin Bosfield and, you know, J.P. Woodman is a very exciting freshman. Errol Robinson gives them another legit shortstop, which has been an area of concern for them the last couple of years. Zach Cozart hasn't been walking through that door the last couple of years. and I think Robinson finally gives them that answer that they needed at short. So I think they're a pretty fascinating club. And you know, we'll see if they can sustain this in SEC play. But so far, so good. I do like the fact that they played a solid schedule. I mean, these are all name teams, Stetson and UCF. And then, you know, Georgia State is a very offensive team this year that they shut down the first two games of that series. So it's not you know, an elite schedule, but it's a solid schedule.
Yeah, and they're ranked in the top 25. So, you know, again, so you lost three SEC teams, or four, I should say. Alabama, A&M, Arkansas, Florida, all out. But two SEC teams come in and take their place, two of the four new faces. Aaron, any concern with you about the Gators? You know, they scored two runs all weekend. I'm sorry, they scored six runs all weekend. They only get one win. And they're 2 weeks away, basically. One more week of non-conference play, but getting in the SEC. Any worries about the Gators? Or Arkansas, or A&M, Alabama long-term. We talked a little bit about A&M, we talked a little bit about Alabama, but it feels like Florida's on shaky ground. They were on shaky ground last year. It's a much younger team this year. I feel like it's a more talented team this year, but it feels pretty shaky.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think the freshman class has upgraded the talent level, but there is going to be a learning curve there. You know, they have not really hit the ground running so far. And, you know, you're right. They're just not scoring runs, like A&M. I mean, those are two teams that are just not scoring a lot of runs. And I believe in A&M's established pitching more than I believe in Florida's. And I think, you know, both these teams will get better offensively. But certainly this is not an encouraging start. You know, in Arkansas, they had just a little bit of a hiccup this weekend, but they did get Trey Killian back, which, you know, he didn't have a very good debut this weekend in his first start since coming back from that NCAA issue.
I was like, Aaron, we went 40 minutes in the podcast without talking NCAA, but Ben Wetzler came back, yeah. Killian came back. Is there anybody still waylaid out there? Is everybody back?
I think that's it. I think everybody's back.
The NCAA clearinghouse doing its job, I guess. So, huzzah! Everyone's playing. It's March, and people are finally playing. So,
hooray!
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for getting those players back on the field. But Harrison Bader not back on the field. That's not an NCAA suspension. That's a Florida suspension.
School suspension. I think it's an automatic 19 games or something. It's like a third of the season automatically for alcohol-related incident with driving. So that
makes some sense, actually. That I have a little formula for it. That probably makes some sense. Yeah. But I mean, like, you wouldn't think that a team that does have some depth would be that affected by one player. But I think it just tells you he's a pretty good player,
and
it's harder. It's hard to replace your best hitter.
Yep.
But the Gators again, the pitching there does look pretty good. Though I was struck. You wrote about him last week when you went down to Miami. Carson Whitson pitches 5 solid innings this weekend. Do you ever feel like he's ever going to be his old self, Aaron, or can he at least be a good college pitcher?
You know, I mean, I was encouraged by the fact that I saw some 93s and maybe a 94 or 2, depending on what gun you looked at last week. That, to me, tells me that the arm strength is coming back. And, you know, he didn't have, like I said, like I wrote about last week, I don't think he had conviction yet with the slider. That's going to come. But, you know, even that, he snapped off a couple of times with some velocity. I mean, I want to say it was 83, 84. So, I mean, it's, you know, you can see the signs, the makings of what he used to be are still there. And he seems to be progressing each week. And, yeah, I think he's got a chance to, you know, to return to form. I mean, it wasn't like he had, like a torn labrum that was like a career-threatening thing. I mean, it was, you know, as far as shoulder surgery goes, it was, you know,
it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. So, yeah, I think he can return to form, and you know, we'll see. I don't know if he's going to get another chance for $2 million out of the draft. Probably not.
That may have been by the boards. A couple of you think of the Padres, and you think it's, you know, Carson Whitson that didn't sign, and Brett Austin that didn't sign. Brett Austin, nice college player. Carson Whitson's been to Omaha. Brett Austin's been to Omaha. Those guys turned down a combined like $3.5+ million. I don't think they're going to get that money again. So
no, I don't think so.
There's more to it than that. I get it. I'm not crushing the kids here, but it's hard to be offered. Very few high school players get offered that kind of money, and it's very hard to bet on yourself. So I would expect the players to do that, but it's challenging, and it doesn't always work out.
They don't want to play, John. They don't want to play.
Well, you hear it. Well, the thing is, I think you hear a lot about the Mark Appels who do bet on themselves, and it works out.
Yep.
And we talk a lot about those kind of guys, and it's good to talk about those guys. There are also other stories
with
the guys. I think sometimes the scouts only talk about their guys who turned down the money and it didn't work out, and they want to remind people of that. And you know, I hear the story all the time that, you know, people like told Brett Austin, hey, here's the track record of hitters out of NC State historically. Well, Trey Turner's killing that. You know, Trey Turner turned in a lot of money out of high school and went to NC State, and he bet on himself and it's going to work out. So I just think that sometimes pro ball always accentuates, and on Twitter a lot of times you just hear the pro side of it and the money that got turned down, and I think sometimes you don't think about the money that guys who did bet on themselves talked about. So it's just a very mixed picture out there. And yeah, those guys are on my – Carson Whitson, that's the first thing, that, like you said last week when you wrote about it. He's always going to be talked about as the unsigned first-round pick. And he's hoping to live that down. And the way you live that down is you compete. You help your team win games. He competed well this weekend. So I don't know the kid. I don't know the dad. I don't know all the story. I'm kind of rooting for him just to pitch well and help his team win games.
Absolutely.
Because it's all, like you said, it's always going to be talked about the money. And it's just not all about the money. You know. So for him, it's about competing, throwing your pitches with conviction, kind of let the chips fall where they may. But right now, he wears a Florida Gators uniform, and see if he helps that team pitch win games. And they didn't win his start this weekend, but he pitched well, so I'm encouraged by that. So a little rambling there.
I liked it,
but there was a point to it. It's just not, you can't define all these draft decisions by the money. And we talked about Matt Crook and Phil Bickford, and right now Phil Bickford's defining it by he went and shoved, and he helped Cal State Fullerton win a sweep a weekend series. And you know, he committed to Cal State Fullerton in the first place for a reason. It wasn't just draft leverage. It's because he liked the program and he wanted to wear Titans across his chest.
Sure.
He's got 3 years to do that and to win some games for his team. So
and look at Tyler Beattie for Vanderbilt. I mean, a guy that could have, you know, could have made a lot of money out of high school and
turned down a lot, just like Tyler Bickford. Same team, same draft class. Aaron Nola, Luke Weaver, Tyler Beattie, same Toronto Blue Jays draft class.
How about that?
We had there's a Twitter question about the Blue Jays asking about where their farm system will rank. Not really the podcast to answer that, but I tell you what, their farm system will rank a lot better if they had Aaron Nola, Tyler Beattie, and Luke Weaver in it.
Yeah,
think how different we think about them with those three mother scratchers in there. I mean, that's a pretty big unsigned class, and Beattie was the first round pick. The other two guys were like 19 to 20 first round picks, somewhere in that range. So they weren't as big a priority, but in that era, that last draft class, 2011, anything went. Spend the money. And we think about the Blue Jays, I think, very differently. And we think about those three college teams, Vanderbilt, LSU. We haven't even talked about Nola on the podcast yet this year. We should make a point to do about
next
Monday.
He's so automatic that you almost take it for granted. And also, they haven't played anybody.
Those two things. They lost two games this week.
They lost to Yale in a game they led 6-0 at home on a Sunday.
That is...
Wow.
That's NG.
I mean, wow. That was, to me, the stunner of the weekend.
I mean, you're seriously probably... we probably need to tweet out... We need to monitor the Twitter of the LSU baseball team today just to see what Pulmonary put them through in the wake of blowing that game, because I bet you it's not going to be too pretty. So, a little rambly here at the end. I apologize, but I get a little fired up about that subject. So, Aaron, great stuff. Looking forward to the three strikes from... wrapping up South Carolina Clemson series. Glad you went down there. Are you glad you went down there?
I really am. It really, you know, it's like we were saying before the podcast started. You know, I think I've gone to the Minute Maid tournament every year since 2007, just because you can see six teams in 3 days and you got the roof. So you know you're going to get the games in.
Guaranteed. But it wouldn't even have been guaranteed if you had stayed on the West Coast this year with the rain. Who knew UCLA had to come to North Carolina to get good weather?
How about that?
Remember that, Johnny Savage.
It's supposed to sleet here any minute now, I think.
It is, yes. Early release for the kids. I need to go pick up my kids. Yeah.
But anyway, the tournament, you know, or the Clemson-South Carolina series, glad I finally made it a priority this year heading into the season, and glad I did because it was fantastic. Great atmosphere, great ballparks, great crowds.
Lived up to the hype.
Yeah, and you know, the storylines were pretty remarkable.
And the media attention. Is it not like just crazy media?
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, and I think South Carolina basketball like beat Kentucky this weekend, so I mean, but I don't think anybody noticed. You know, I mean, they were all focused on the baseball series. That's to me what makes it so special is that in basketball, it is the second biggest sport in that state after college football.
Yeah.
There's just no question. So kudos to those two programs. Kudos to those coaching staffs and those fans for making it must watch TV and a big event on the college baseball calendar. We love them for it. So for Aaron Fitt, who I also love. I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with a 2014 attack rate and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, faster, lighter. I'm sorry. Stronger, lighter, farther. Louisville Slugger. We'll do that better next week, and we'll come back with more college baseball next Monday. Until then, so long, everybody.